It's time for Outdoors with Luke Clayton on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Well, good morning, folks, and welcome to our little 15-minute weekly outdoor show. This is your old buddy Luke Clayton, and we've got a lot to talk about. Our first guest here is Ted Hill with Dallas Ducks Unlimited. And if you've never been to the big Dallas DU banquet each year, I want Ted to tell you about it. I've been going there for 10 or 12 years. It's been a long time, but I look forward to it every year. Ted, thanks a lot for being with us, buddy.
Thanks, Luke. It's good to talk to you again.
Yes, sir. It's always good to get you on. And, you know, I call it the biggie, the Dallas DU. There's a lot of chapters around, and they're all excellent. But people from all over the state, actually, in other states, come to Dallas, the banquet each year, don't they?
Absolutely. You know, we hosted 540 outdoorsmen last year. It was a sellout event for us. We're on target to do the same thing this year. We still got tables available, and we're still looking to bring people in and show them, what conservation's like here in Dallas, Texas.
You bet. Well, it's alive and well, and I could, that was witnessed last year at the banquet there. For folks that's never been to the Dallas or any DU banquet, the whole reason for it is to raise money to help to restore wetlands and to ensure that there's going to be waterfowl around for future generations. That's the crux of it, isn't it?
Yeah, DU concentrates in what they've kind of put it into three words. It's the conservation, preservation, and education of wetlands across North America. They're one of the leading, or are the leading wetland conservation group in North America. And a couple of the areas that they really strive to do their best bang for their buck is up at the Prairie Pothole region and then down there along the Texas coastlines. And the funds that we help raise are critical to the establishments and the preservations of these habitat for the waterfowl.
You bet. If folks have never flown over that pothole region, many, many times I've flown into Minneapolis, St. Paul, and got on a commuter plane and flown west to Bismarck and up in the Dakotas to hunt. And when you fly over that country, that is where the, not all the ducks, but the vast majority of the ducks we shoot, that's the rookery, if you will. That's
right.
Where they get their start, isn't it, Ted?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Prairie Pothole region, it really kind of starts up there in Kansas and really goes on up into Canada. But that is the breeding ground for the majority of the ducks that fly through the central flyway that, you'll get into Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, and then all the way into Louisiana and Arkansas and stuff. So it's a critical part of the breeding habitat and the breadth of, Mother Earth out there. It's kind of where it all starts.
You bet. Ted, a lot of people in Northeast Texas right now are listening to us that are members of local chapters, and I'd like to say this. I know that you're a proponent of local people going to their local chapters as much as anybody.
Yep.
And I am too. But I'm telling you, folks, if you've never been to the Dallas DU banquet, go ahead and drive an hour and a half or whatever, from Greenville or wherever you need to come to and schedule an evening. You'll be glad you did. Ted, the best way, the website, how about giving the website, and then that's the best way for folks to learn more about the banquet, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, if you'll go to www.dallasducks.org, you'll see one of our big items on there for the event. You'll also find some PDFs about how to sponsor, how to buy tables, or how to, even if you want to donate a trip or something to the organization and to the event, you can do that there as well. But that's really where you're going to get the most of that stuff.
Well, it's going to be a fun event. I'm looking forward to it, and I look forward to seeing you there and hopefully a lot of our listeners, Ted. So again, thank you very much for being with us, man.
Absolutely, man. We'd love to have them. And again, go out to the website. The event's November the 16th. So if you're going to get your tickets, get online today.
Thank you, Ted.
Thank you, sir.
Folks, I got back from a hunt here about 2 days ago up in Jack County. Actually, you'll get to read about that in the Greenville Herald banner. You know, the column, the outdoor column that I do, is in 34 Texas papers, and it's on several hunting websites, hunting and fishing websites as well. But this week in the Greenville Herald banner, locally up in Northeast Texas, you can certainly read the article. But it was on, I went up with my son Drew, went up on a deer hunt. And it turned into there's lots and lots of deer there on Squaw Mountain Ranch. I killed a 157 buck last year with my bow up there. So there's some really nice bucks, and a lot bigger than that, to be truthful with you. But there's also a lot of turkey. And I want to tell you about something that you may not have given a lot of thought to, and that's bow hunting turkey in the fall. You know, most of us that hunt, a lot of us are rabid spring turkey hunters. We like to get out and call up the gobblers during the breeding season, and that's a lot of fun. But, you know, we're missing the boat on fall turkey hunting, especially with a bow. The challenge with a bow is just a whole lot greater than it is when you're hunting with turkeys with a shotgun, that's for sure. But I'll tell you about the hunt we did a couple of days ago up there at Squaw Mountain Ranch. My son Drew went with me, and we set up a pop-up blind. It's a blind that it sets up in a matter of a minute, but it's roomy. I'm a little over 6 foot tall. I can stand up easily in the blind. Plenty of room, has windows where you can conceal the drawing of your bow, and then you can ease that bow up out the window and shoot. So we'd set our pop-up blind up in the corner of a food plot, and there was a corn feeder for deer. We were hunting deer, but in the back of my mind, I thought, it's early in the season. If a big doe comes out, I'm going to shoot, try to get that doe for meat. If a turkey comes out, I'm going to try to get a turkey or a hog. I was kind of pretty flexible on this hunt rather than just being locked in for a trophy buck. Well, we'd been settled in for maybe, 15 or 20 minutes, and my son tapped me on the shoulder and looked. He was using the camera trying to do some filming with us, and tapped me on the shoulder and looked out to the right, and out in this food plot, it was recently planted. There were some little, you know, some green sprouts there coming up. About 15 or 20 turkey moved into the field. Well, we'd had a couple of a hen and a Jake decoy set up intentionally because Steve Weiser, that runs the ranch down there, had told me there's a lot of turkey frequenting that area. It's right on the west fork of the Trinity, I believe is that river, but we were within 150 yards of the river down there at Squaw Mountain Ranch. This is up north of Jacksboro. It's where we were at. But as those turkeys kind of moved into the field, they spotted our decoys. And, you know, the decoys would not have hurt deer. I mean, the deer would have, I've had deer walk right between two turkey decoys. So it wasn't a factor in messing up our deer hunt. But it did play a good factor in bringing those turkeys in. It was a mixed flock, mostly younger birds, but there was a few gobblers in there. And they came in when they spotted those two decoys. They didn't make a run for them, but they just began to feed their way over there. And in another 30 minutes, it took a while, but I had a good, about four of them had come right in the midst of those two decoys we had. And I was able to get my bow drawn down in below the window in the blind, get it drawn. I eased it up really slowly, made a good shot there, and had some turkey meat on the ground. So that was earlier on in the hunt. You know, we had the full moon last week, and it was warm, so I didn't really expect the deer to start moving until later, and, you know, I was right. I'd use some cover scent that's made. It's called 33 Point attractant scent, and I think we had here a week or so back, we had Rex Holmes that makes this stuff on with us. Well, I was using that. I'd used the sprayer to put it in the air, and I've even sprayed it on the bushes around there. So I thought our cover scent was good. I didn't think that the deer would wind us. This stuff does a good job, you know, covering up your scent. And plus, there's a plant extract in it. I don't know what it is. It's kind of a secret, I think, but it's something the deer really like. So our scent was controlled there. And just before, it was 30 minutes before dark, I saw out the left side of the blind a doe, and a big doe, and then about a year and a half, probably a younger doe, come through the brush, through the heavy cover, made a circle like they'll always do, downwind. And you could tell when they got the scent of that 33-point lure that I'd put in the air and on those bushes, they froze for a minute, and then they immediately became calm. I think, honestly, that they were about to leave. But I used that mister, and I turned it on, put a good heavy mist in the air when I saw them coming around. So they smell what I'd put on the ground and on the bushes, but I know they also smell what was in the air. But when the oldest doe threw her head up, and you could tell she'd got the scent of that lure. When she did, she tensed for a minute, and then immediately her body language told me she was calm, and she came straight in. There was a corn feeder that was situated about 22 yards from my blind. Well, she was coming directly to that corn feeder, and she'd stop and smell the bushes along the way that I'd sprayed with that attractant. She got right up within, one step from where I was already drawn, and guess what happened? Now, anything can happen on a hunting trip. It just so happened that doe had timed her approach with the timer on the feeder. She'd stayed one more, I'm talking 3 seconds, I was about to shoot that deer at about 22 yards. The feeder went off, and guess what she and that other deer did? They vamoosed into the brush. So my son and I, it's getting pretty late. We decided it'd probably be best to get, it's getting kind of warm, it'd be best to get that turkey retrieved and get it back to camp and get it dressed. So we wanted to make some turkey fajitas, and we did, with an awesome way to prepare wild turkey. The next morning, Steve Weezer had pointed me in another direction to hunt up in a tripod stand up on top of a hill. He showed me some trail cameras with lots and lots of deer movement there, a lot of deer activity, and some turkey and some hogs were in there too. So this was more of a meat hunt than it was a trophy buck hunt. I've kind of reserved that for a little bit later during the rut, you know. But I got up in there 30 minutes before daylight. To make a long story short, with the full moon, the deer moved late in the morning. Actually, I saw my first deer about 10 minutes till 9. And it was a big doe came into the feeder. Well, I made another mistake. If I was hunting doe, I should have shot that one. I didn't. I kept waiting. And before long, there was about 5 or 6 more deer coming in out of the brush. At one point there, I had 7 mature doe and 1 buck that was a 2.5-year-old. He was probably a 125-inch buck, but not what I was looking for. Now, I was wishing badly that I had shot that doe for meat, you know. And now I had about 7 deer right within from 12 to 20 yards directly below my stand. If you've bow hunted very much, you know that's not the easiest thing to do, is to get a bow drawn when there's that many deer. Now, that one deer, when it came in, this might help other bow hunters, you know, that would have been an easy shot. She was standing out there 20 yards looking the opposite direction, broadside. I could have easily harvested that doe early on. But all of them there, I knew that my chances were pretty slim. So I waited until the deer started leaving, and 2 or 3 left. But they deer, when they leave an area, they don't just leave. A lot of times they'll hang up in the brush and look back on their back trail, see who's coming behind them. That's what these deer did. And I finally, the last deer was there, and as I started to draw, one of the deer back in the brush spotted me, an old doe, stomped her feet, I know you've heard that, and snorted, and it was done. Then the whole bunch of them took off. But what really impressed me is that 33-point scent attractant. I was there with, I'm talking right on top of all these deer, and not one of them smelled me. Now, I had the pump-up sprayer with the scent in it going up in that tripod, too. When they started coming in, I just turned it on and let it continue to put a stream of air out. But like Rex Holmes has told us, I guess, last week's show, that actually blocks the deer. They cannot smell you. That's what they're smelling, is that scent from the food source that they like so much, plus it's just, it also serves as a cover scent. So that's my hunting story this week, folks. And if you have a chance, read it in the Greenville Herald banner. It'll be in there this week. And I think you might get a kick out of that. Do remember that you can go online to catfishradio.com. www.catfishradio.com, and there you can listen to the archive of each week's hour-long hunting and fishing show that we do. So until this time next week, I want you to have a good time in the outdoors and be safe.
Luke Clayton has been addicted to everything outdoors since his childhood. He grew up hunting and fishing in rural Northeast Texas. Luke pens a weekly newspaper column that appears in over 50 newspapers. For videos, archived newspaper articles, and more information, visit catfishradio.com. This has been Outdoors with Luke Clayton on your station, 88.9 KETR.